Low Tide, Dylan Holloway. Now, he's got a broken thumb, and I'm going to say the odds are like 1%. But let's say, you know, he was healthy now. Would it be willing, even for like 15 games, would that be enough for you to burn a year of his ECL?
Ordinarily, I'd say no, and I probably could be talked out of it. But the only reason I would say it would be interesting is it might be worthwhile for Ken Holland to see. They need a big left winger. They need a guy with size. And he's a rambunctious guy. I don't think he'd be overwhelmed by the physical nature of the NHL. It might take him a little while to adjust, but he's a bigger guy. And we don't, you know, he might be a year and a half in the NHL. We don't know. But if you gave him 15 games just to see, I think it might be worth finding out how close he is. And you can say, well, it's the end of the year and all that. It's still a gauge. You'd get a good gauge 15 games. I don't think it'll happen. I could be talked out of it. But, man, I'd like to know how close he is. And I think you'd know after 15 games.
Well, I think back to when Yamamoto, when he came in his second year at Christmas and the impact he had on the team. You know, can you place a bet that you don't have to go hog wild in getting a big left winger, thinking that maybe Dylan Holloway can be that guy next year if you don't see him play this year?
I don't think you can. I think you'd likely pencil him in the AHL, and then if he surprises you, great, you know. But you can't count on him, right? Like, you've got to right now when they go into the off season. They're going to have to decide on Nuge, Larson, and Barry, and you know, whatever happens there. Goaltending is going to be a really important position to fill, however they do that. And then left wing. They need, you know, if they sign Nuge, then I think they would want to have a bigger guy. And even if they, you know, even if they get a bigger guy, then maybe you'd still want to know if Holloway was there. But you wouldn't be able to count on him unless you saw him. Like, you'd have to go out and get that left winger. And my suspicion is, trade or free agency, he'd be in the $3 to $4 million range, the guy you're picking up.
When you look at Dylan Holloway, Lavoie, McLeod, and Tyler Benson, when we get past Christmas next year, realistically, how many would you expect of those guys to be on the roster?
I think McLeod will be for sure. He's got good foot speed. I think Benson is a waiver eligible guy. So my suspicion is he's at least on the roster, maybe not playing as much as, you know, he'd probably be a third, fourth line guy at that point. Lavoie, I don't see any problem in leaving him down there. He's a great shooter. He's got 3 goals in his last 4 games. But, you know, his urgency without the puck is Jay Woodcroft's going to want to have a talk with him. And then Holloway, I mean, I think Holloway is the one guy who's kind of a wild card because he could jump the entire queue. He's a first-round pick, and he's a big guy, and he had a great year. So you could put him anywhere from first to fourth on that list, and I think you'd leave him as a wild card. He might push down everybody, or he might start in the AHL.
Well, the advantage he has is he's a left winger, whereas Lavoie's a right winger. And, you know, you've got Puljujärvi, you got Yamamoto. It's funny to say the orders, you know, they might actually have an abundance of right shot wingers coming forward, kind of something they never had either, like a right defenseman. So it's a good issue. I agree. They probably start him in the American League next season. But I'm telling you, man, the more I watch Raphael Lavoie, and I've seen his progression, big body, who's physical, he is exactly what this organization needs.
Well, he can shoot the puck right now in the NHL. They are playing him on the left side, which I find interesting. But I think they probably would move him over to right wing when he arrives here. The only thing, like, if you watch him in the AHL right now, he really does play like a junior star, and I'm not trying to put him down, but he doesn't. He's really not, you know, skating after every puck or checking his man hard. He'll pick that up. It's not like he's lazy or slow or anything like that. But I think that you've got to iron that out before you bring him up.
Yeah, and that takes time. And I think that's why, you know, you look at it. He's going to need. What did it take Yamamoto? A year and a half?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so I mean, you're looking at a year and a half, but they are coming. Joined by Alan Mitchell from the Lowdown with Low Tide. You can hear him every day here on the station between 10 and 12 on TSN 1260. When you look at Kulikov, you know, what would be reasonable expectations for him as far as the impact he'd have with this group when he does get going after his quarantine?
Well, I think I would try him on the second pair, and like a shutdown pair like Larson and Kulikov would to me be ideal because you can run him on the penalty kill. But I'd also like to see him with Bear because I think Barry and Nurse will stay together. I think Bear could be a good outlet passer for him. The Kulikov has great utility, and I think that he's. He's just a little better with the puck than Chris Russell, so you can count on him a little more in the second pair, and then you slide Russell down, and maybe he plays with Jones plays sometimes, Russell others, or whatever the case may be. But I think he gives them a veteran defenseman who can play in a shutdown role and play penalty kill, even strength, and second pair, even strength. And that's I know he doesn't cost a lot. I know his salary isn't big, but in New Jersey, his numbers guys were really good. Really good. He was far better in New Jersey than he was in Winnipeg.
Yeah, well, we had guys on for New Jersey, and him and PK Subban really worked out well. And I still think Kulikov, to start anyway, should go with Ethan Bear. If it's not going to go with Bear, then you probably play him with Barry. You don't really want to play him with Larson. You could for last minute of periods and stuff, and on the penalty kill, no problem. But overall, I don't necessarily think that's a great plan. And that's why when I look at the order situation for pairings, is you've got Kulikov and Larson are very similar in a lot of ways. I think both are probably better puck carriers than they are puck passers, to be honest. So, but putting them together doesn't really work. Whereas Chris Russell, his numbers actually in the article I wrote today, and I got all the numbers from Sport Logic. Chris Russell's passing was actually better, and I always thought Chris Russell was a decent passer. I didn't think he was as good as in some of these categories that he came out as. He doesn't do it that often, but when he does do it, his passing's pretty good, and that's a whole different argument. I still think Edmonton's kind of one little piece away from the perfect mix. If Caleb Jones was playing like you hoped he would, then you could just play Jones with Larson, and you could even put Barry with Kulikov and Bear with Nurse or whatever you wanted. But Jones's play this season just doesn't allow that. I don't know if you read the article or not, Al, but you see all of Chris Russell's numbers this season ahead of to Caleb Jones. It's not even close why Chris Russell's playing ahead of him.
Well, Russell's had a good year. Like, Russell, for what he is, what he does, has had, it's hard. You look at Puck IQ or any of those other spots, he's played well. He, for most of his Oilers career, his results at 5-on-5, if you're looking at goal differential or goals against per 60, Chris Russell performs well. He doesn't. It's the old argument about what does he do offensively? Well, he's not a terrific offensive player, but he is really good at keeping the puck out of the net. And he and Larson are, when Larson's healthy, they're excellent at it. The problem Russell has, I think, is that there's a point where in a game where the puck has come in so many times and there's the shot, the alley-oop out, and then it's coming right back. And I think that does run the team into a little bit of a 50 or a 60-second sequence where they're having two rushes into the zone and they're getting caved a little bit in shots. And Russell is one of the guys who will do the alley-oop pass out. And Larson does it too. And it doesn't really get you anywhere. A solid pass tape to tape like Strutty used to do, like on a dime, those are what you need.
Not fair to compare. It's not fair to those guys.
I'm sorry.
To be honest,
it's just that I just remember them as being as good as they were. So,
well, I call them works of art. If you want to know the truth, that's what I call
paintings.
Them.
Paintings. Blue boy.
So, Dave Tippett hasn't tipped his hand about keeping 97 and Drysdale together. Do you see a way to success having them together against a Winnipeg Jets team that is, at least three centermen deep?
Well, I saw the lines the other day, and Gaetan Haas was on the second line. And I think you avoid that if you can. And with Nugent, I think you have to... I think you have to run McDavid with his line and then Draisaitl with his line, and then if later on if things are if you're down 3-2 late or whatever, then you do it that way. But I like Haas a lot, but I don't think he can I don't think he can play that high, like offensively or defensively. That's a lot. And Winnipeg, their centers are like, they're four ridiculous centers. They're probably five guys who you'd consider putting on your team at center on that club. And they just signed their third, fourth guy today, and they're really good there. I think you got to move Draisaitl over to center and put him on a separate line.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that that's, you know, because you just, it's a tough, I mean, Gaetan Haas is, it's asking him too much to do, you know, and then I can already hear the text, oh, Gaetan Haas isn't good. No, it's not that he's not good. He's being asked to do too much. You know, he's too far up the lineup. So, you know, having Nugent definitely kind of highlights that there is a need for more depth down the middle. And, you know, I don't know, can Jujar fill a third line spot? You know, he's doing okay. But in a 5-7-game series, 1-2-3, man. That's a pretty tough 1-2-3 without Nugent Hopkins or Draisaitl at center.
Yeah, you need, you know, and it's too bad because we're coming into this series and has been a big delay and you know, Winnipeg's playing really well right now. So the Saturday night result is, I mean, I think it'll be better than the Calgary result last Saturday night, but it's going to be tough for them because they don't have Nugent Hopkins. But what it really does, it points out in the summertime, you know, Nugent would be a great third line guy if you could pay him $4 million, but you can't. So at $6 million, he's your second line something, and that's probably your left winger. But what this points out is he's a great insurance policy, and when he's not there, you miss him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something to think about as you move into the offseason. If the Oilers move ahead without Nugent Hopkins, you know, they got to figure that out. Who is that insurance policy?
Zach Hyman?
Oh, boy, he's a nice player, eh? Holy cow.
Yeah, but here's the thing, guys. If you have enough good wingers, then you're never playing McDavid and Draisaitl regularly again anymore, right? You've got enough weird. Like, you could sign two left wingers in free agency. Like, Zach Hyman, he's not going to get you more than $4 million, is he, Al?
Oh, God, I hope not, but...
Yeah, right? So, you know, like, let's say 3.5.
But to get him out of Toronto, you're going to have to pay
him. But they can't afford him. They can't even afford him at 3.5.
Oh, Toronto's screwed. Toronto cannot get...
Zach Hyman's going to the free agent market for sure.
They're not going to find a way to get that done with him?
Well, they might try, but they're going to have to make some big moves to do that.
Yeah. Well, they have to move a lot. If you look at Toronto, I mean, unless they're, you know... Unless somebody's going to retire all of a sudden, they got some real issues here, and they're really top heavy. Like, they're really, really top heavy. I don't know that you could go that high, in all honesty, with him, unless you could, you know, you could move Kerfoot, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he's
the guy they're going to want to trade for sure. Now, you know, they got a boatload of UFA guys in the last year of their deals, but none of them are making big money. So it's not like, you know, a big ticket's coming off their contract. Well, I guess obviously Freddie Anderson in goal, but they're going to have to replace him with somebody of significance, I would think. So they might be able to sign Hyman, but man, if I think he could, I think for what Zach Hyman does, he'd get $4 million in the open market.
Yep, and I think that would be a really tough nut for if you look at the Leafs and where they're spending money. Like, you know, look, Spezza and Thornton signed for $700,000. Are they probably going to retire? But I mean, that's, you know, that, I mean, does that pay the fuel for their vehicle? I mean, these guys are, you know, they don't need the money clearly.
No. Well, I mean, but the Leafs do have Jackie Campbell and Big Save Dave, right? That's their goalies for next year. Total cap hit of $2.5 million. No.
Does anybody, like, I really like what Jack Campbell's done, and his minor league numbers are good, but does anybody feel like it's a little crazy to, like, and Rittich is the backup, and I get that, but do you think they maybe should have at least looked at bringing in Ullmark or somebody, like, a little more established goaltender here?
Oh, I think they might have tried, man. But if you're the Buffalo Sabres, you can't trade Ullmark. You ought to try to re-sign him. You got to keep some players if you want to rebuild, right? I think Ullmark's a good player. I think they're going to sign him in Buffalo. So,
man, he's good. Yeah, he'd be a good target for the Oilers if he came available.
Well, the other day you wrote that the Oilers should re-sign Mike Smith for a 2-year deal. So now suddenly you're not doing that.
I never wrote that. Although I will tell you that everything I say about the Oilers goaltenders is the opposite. So, I mean, like I said, I did write that they would have a replacement for Smith by midseason, and I was wrong. I had to go in and delete that article. No, I didn't really, but
and I do find it interesting that people that are very critical of Ken Holland when they're ripping him for Mike Smith, they never ever go out and say, "Oh, geez, I was wrong about Mike Smith,"
man.
Right? Or Darnell Nurse, or Tyson Berry, like Tyson Berry on a 1-year contract.
Great
like,
deal.
It's like you can't differentiate. It's okay to say Tyson Berry's been good in his role for what he does for your team without having to try to find every number to twist and turn to find a way to say to disparage him. If you want to say don't re-sign him, that's a totally other conversation that's totally valid. But it doesn't mean you have to try to rip apart every element of his game that's done really well this season. I don't get it.
Oh, look, between Tyson Berry and Mike Smith, Ken Holland, those two contracts, and I didn't think Mike Smith was going to be a value deal. I thought Cahoon would be. But those two, for what they're paying them, they're probably worth more than double what he's paying them in terms 100%. Of what value they bring him.
Oh, it's huge. And I think that is going to be the number one assignment for Ken Holland to do this offseason. Find another deal or two like that where you're definitely getting more bang for your buck.
Al, have a great one. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll talk to you Monday.
Boys, be good. Thank you.